And it's great yet again to have Pete Selick of Iron Savior here on the Metal Command Radio Show. Of course, Pete, I have to tell you to start off this interview that your new album is by far probably one of the best albums you've put out, if not the best album that you've ever put out. And I'm really loving your new record. And tell everybody about the new album. Kill or Get Killed.
Yeah, sure. I mean, actually, first of all, thanks for the those great words. What can I say? I'm flattered. But yeah, I think it's a very, very strong album as well. And well, I mean, there is of course a unification album, and there is a Conditional Red, and there is a Landing out there already. But yeah, I agree totally with you. I think Kill or Get Killed definitely at least is in the same league, and that shows already, because we're gonna put 7 songs from that album into our live set. Mm-hmm. So that really tells a lot, I'd say.
Now, most of your albums you've put out have a theme or a story or a underlying meaning to all of the songs that kind of, you know, all the songs are related somehow. And is this album like a concept album? Is there any kind of theme to the lyrics of these songs? And talk about the lyrics of this record and what some of these songs are about.
Yeah, I mean, as usual, I have a couple of songs who are dealing with a tiny little story I made up for this album as well, again. And this time I was inspired by an audiobook I was listening to a couple of years ago called Star Fondora, and it has 2 more parts. And, well, it's a very, very elaborate story, but to nail it down, the main key factor of this story is this alien race, which lives far away on a planet, and their survival strategy is to kill everything around so that there is nobody else around and so that there's no competition anymore, and so that all the resources are only for this remaining race. And if you if you take that concept out to the stars, well, then the universe really has a problem. And so the head of the mean guys is on the CD cover, and well, his motto is to kill or get killed, and he decides to kill.
I gotcha. So, like,
of course he got stopped by mankind, you know, of course, in the end. But at least he tried to, and he's getting someplace.
So did mankind use the Iron Savior to stop him?
Well, mankind uses all its omnipotent might to destroy the alien. Is that a cool sentence or what?
Actually, that sounds like something.
Really like the word omnipotent.
And as I said, you know, this is a strong record from the songwriting perspective as well. And did you take your time in writing these songs, or were these songs just something that you started writing and it just came out pretty quickly?
Actually, I started songwriting pretty early after Titancraft was done, because I don't know, I had some cool ideas. And after Titancraft, where I decided, when I was making the album, to be a little bit more open to let's say, more progressive elements again. I had the idea that the next album should be a little bit more down to earth again, and started to write songs in that vein. Then I stopped songwriting because I had to do the Riding on Fire Reforged album in between. And I don't know, maybe getting back to this vibes of the old times, I don't know, maybe somehow a little bit of that swept over when I continued songwriting for Kill or Get Killed. It's nothing that I did on purpose, or I was actually had a plan to write stuff in that vein. But I think that Kill or Get Killed somehow breathes like a little bit of the DNR of the older days, and maybe that's the secret ingredient what makes Kill or Get Killed a little bit different than let's say Titancraft or Rise of the Hero or even The Landing.
So if you have the box set, you know, talk about this demo song Overkill, and tell us a little bit about that.
well, it's just something I pulled out of the drawer, which for to make this box set a little bit more interesting. I just stumbled across that a couple of weeks before I had this marketing meeting with AFM, and when we talked about how what to do with the box set, I said, I have this old really crappy recording of Overkill, one of the first songs that that we played with Gentry, and my very first band together with Kai, of course, and it was. I thought it might be interesting for some really long-term fans and who are also interested in where Halloween is coming from and stuff like that, to see how everything got started. And of course, it sounds like crap. I think it's 7 minutes long, and I think the song repeats itself multiple times, but with the recording and the way we did it, which is described on this audio CD as well, we thought that is the coolest thing ever. And so, well, that's why I thought as a little gimmick, it's probably pleasing the one or other.
Now, it seems like with this album, Pete, that you really polished this album pretty good and made it sound amazing and really took your time with it. And, you know, talk a little bit about the production aspect of this record, which I think sounds amazing. It sounds just as good as anything you've ever done.
Well, I have to add, because it's written on the album, also on Titancraft, that I think one main factor for the drum, for the sound, is that I was not recording a real audio drum anymore. I stopped, discontinued that already on Titancraft. And instead of that, we recorded MIDI signals only with a we used a regular drum kit and put instead of regular skins, we had like we have the trigger skins on that one, and so they can capture the MIDI. And well, I mean, Tony, if you record a real audio drum, what do you do afterwards? You sit down in your Pro Tools system, you hit Beat Detective and cut everything into pieces and move it to the click. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think, honestly, I think by doing this, you destroy more of the personal feel that a drummer has than if you just, well, let's say there's a snare hit, which is not really where it's supposed to be. Well, when just recording MIDI notes, I can just grab this one snare hit and move it. The rest stays the way it is. Feeling of the drummer is untouched, and this is not possible if you have an audio drum. And honestly, you take these audio drums, cut them into tiny little pieces, move them to the grid, and then you put samples on it. Mm-hmm. That's insane. So I said myself, Pete, you can skip this and do it just like this. And well, I'm using Superior Drummer now. I'm using Superior Drummer 3.0, and I don't hear a difference in the drumming, and that's the only thing that counts for me. But on the other hand, it gives you so much more possibility also mix wise because the whole thing is just clearer and punchier and everything. And well, and this really does a very, very important job for clearing up the picture in general, making a mix like this possible.
You know, I was listening to the Riding on Fire album, and I thought one of the things that was pretty cool about the record is that you sang on songs that you originally did not sing on. So like a song like For the World, for example, a song like Watcher in the Sky, which now has, I guess, its third version, you know, I thought was a pretty interesting idea for you to do that.
Well, to be honest, the main reason was, of course, I could have asked Kai quite easily, and I was also thinking about that. But then on the other hand, I thought, well, it would be kind of funny to only have Kai in, you know, and not all the other people. Then I had to ask, Daniel Zimmerman to play some drums and stuff like that. And that would have been, probably a little bit going out of hand, you know. And so I decided that there's just like on a regular album, no guest musicians, and we just do it ourselves. And and I thought, on the other hand, it also might be, as you just said, it's interesting to hear a Watcher in the Sky version sung just by me, because it wasn't existing any so far. And so it's not really a new song, but it's a, well, it's a new approach of the song. And I also thought it's a good idea to do.
Yeah, you know, I found it interesting that you did a Bryan Adams cover at the end of this album, Run to You, which I thought was a pretty interesting thing for you. And you've always done interesting cover songs like that, too.
Well, I have to admit that the Bryan Adams cover, Bryan Adams cover is only on the, so far it's only on the Japanese version. It's not on the on the European and the US version. So if you're interested in that, you have to get it somehow. I mean, you got it because I sent it to you. But sorry, cannot send it to everybody else. But yeah, it's I don't know. To be honest, originally Sin City was planned to be was meant to be the Japanese bonus track, but somehow I miscounted the minutes, and when I was almost done with the album, I've realized that I'm a little bit on the short side when it comes to running time. And so I had to come up with something. And, well, a couple of days ago was, well, it was Bryan Adams' Run to You on the radio. And I just listened to it accidentally. And somehow it was still in my mind. And I thought, well, what can you do? What can you do? And so I brought in Patrick. And, well, and we just started, laid down Run to You. So, and it was, I didn't know if it would turn out cool or so, but yeah, I must say, I mean, a lot of people really sort of like dig this song, and a lot of people already, well, asked me about it, and so I think, yeah, it's probably a good version. In a way, I like it.
Well, you know, as far as covers go, you've always picked out some pretty interesting and diverse stuff. You know, you have Dance with Somebody, you have the Nazareth cover, Desert Plains. You know, there's so many really cool cover songs that you've done. And when you go and do these, you know, how do you pick these things up? And maybe talk a bit about doing some of the cover songs you've been doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there are two ways of doing a cover version. Either you just, well, stick to the original and bring it to a modern sound and try to just perform it well and nicely and everything. Or you have a vision how to, well, change the instrumentation and make it. I think my personal all-time favorite cover version so far still is Seal, Crazy. I really love this. This is a really great cover version of this track. And which I still love very much. But honestly, I'm also really happy with Sin City and Run to You. I didn't expect it to turn out that great. I thought, yeah, come on, it's something there for bonus tracks, blah, blah, blah. Let's do it. But yeah, I think I really like it, both of them. I think also Sin City is really kind of cool.
You know, everybody that listens to this album, Pete, really seems to love it. And how's the album doing for you? How has the response been to this record so far?
Oh, really, very well, honestly. I knew that it's a strong album, and of course I was in good hopes that that the fans really would like it, and then that it would make it to the charts again and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, we hit the charts again at the highest position ever at 54. I mean, 54, of course, is not 14 or 24, but hey, it's 54, and never had that before. And so I'm absolutely very happy. All the reviews and critics are really, most of the time, thumbs up. Of course, there are a couple of haters here and there, but, well, that's normal, I'd say. And, well, I have, it's nothing probably too much off weight, but I regularly check the Amazon charts and stuff like that, and it's still there. It's still in the charts. The album still not out of the heads of people, obviously, and that's a good sign, because there's obviously a good mouth-to-mouth propaganda also going on from fan to fan for this album, so that people keep on buying it. And Well, I mean, we surpassed a couple of bands who had, who've been more favorite in a pole position, or let's say, I can't find the right words at the moment. who have been kind of like a little bit more anticipated than ourselves, but we surpassed them quite easily at the moment, and that is a nice feeling.
Now, obviously, you are going to be touring here pretty soon, and maybe tell everybody about the tour dates that you do have coming up.
Well, we're going to do it, unfortunately, in May. I have to get a little surgery on my shoulder. That is something that turned out, it popped up a couple of weeks ago. There's nothing I can do about it. It's nothing serious, but it needs to be done. It needs to be done so that we can start two shows in the second half of the year. We're going to play a couple of shows before May. We're going to do, for example, we're going to do the metal cruise here in Europe. It starts from Spain, Mallorca, and we're going to play there for 2 days. And we have another festival in Norway. We're going to play, and after that, I have to do this shoulder thing. And once this is done, it takes a couple of weeks to recover from that. And so we're ready to get back on stage in September, where we play a festival here in Hamburg, Metal Days in Hamburg. We're going to play, and then in the second half of the year, or the second half of the second half, so to speak, and also in early 2020, we're going to play a couple of single shows all over Europe, especially in Germany, in France. We're going to play a couple of shows in Italy, and we're still in hopes that somehow, sometimes, we can return to the States and play a couple of shows there. That would be really awesome. Just talked with Jan about it on the way back from rehearsal, that this would be something we really would appreciate.
I would agree.
Now, with having such a big back catalog, does it make it difficult to pick what songs you guys are going to put into the live set?
It does, because right now, we are, as I just mentioned, we're going to put 7 songs from Kill or Get Killed into our live set, which means that, of course, a lot of really, really cool songs have to go. And that is the hardest thing, what to put out, because we cannot play for 3 hours. We don't have 2 singers, you know.
Right.
So we already play for 2 hours if we play a full set, but more is just not possible. So it all has to be nailed down to, let's say, 17 songs. If 7 are from the Kill or Get Killed album, that leaves 10 songs. And of course, there are a couple of songs that you cannot just not play. For example, Heavy Metal Never Dies is a must. We have to play. The Atlantis Falling is something that we have to play. Mm-hmm. Cannot be an Iron Savior show without those songs. Also, Hall of the Hero is a must. You gotta have to play that. And
right.
So there's very little space left for the material, you know, to put in. But I'm quite sure that we have a really, really great set right now, which we are starting to rehearse now for the upcoming shows, and I think it will kill.
It seems like more and more people, you know, more and more people are buying records, and now it's one of those situations where you got to think to yourself, okay, you know, for you guys did really well with these box sets that were sold. So, you know, do you think this is a trend now in the music industry, or do you think it's just basically isolated to yourself?
No, not really, to be honest, because all I hear is that, sales are going down in general. So, No, I think this is something that is not necessarily happening for everybody. It's happening for us, and that's a good thing, of course. But I think when you look at the industry, what happens at the moment, if you ask me, that we look at a change from coming from buying physical CDs or also having physical downloads, it comes more to streams, and the industry right now is not really set to streams, because right now record companies are using streams to promote their stuff in order to sell records or digital copies, and therefore those streams are, if you ask me, they're too cheap at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so there's too little income from the streams, but on the other hand, the CD sales and digital downloads are decreasing, and streams are coming more. I mean, there's Apple Music, there's Spotify, there's all those streaming services, and I think this is what you can expect from the industry for the next years, that there will be a, let's say, call it readjustment. I think streaming will get more expensive, and in order to compensate the loss in CD sales.
Mm-hmm. You know, streaming is like the next version of radio in a sense, because, you know, like commercial radio, basically bands got a royalty every time it was played, except with the streaming services, they're just getting barely anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is because the record industry used to use streams and stuff like that for promotional reasons in the first place, you know. But now with all these new services, like as I just mentioned, Apple Music, Spotify, blah, 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 all this, it's a different thing. And I think it needs readjustment. Because, if you want music, people like me need to have at least a little money for it. Otherwise, I must stop do music and do something else mm-hmm. to make a living on, you know. And so I'm quite sure that this will balance out any which way. I'm quite sure.
Well, Pete, you know, obviously, it was great to have you on the show yet again. And to be honest, this is probably your best album, if not one of your best albums you've ever put out. So do you have any last words for the fans that are going to be checking this out?
Well, I mean, as I said in the beginning, I'm really flattered about your words, but I agree that I think Kill or Get Killed at least has the potential to become, a classic of our back catalog, like The Landing or Conditional Red or Unification album. Mm-hmm. I think it definitely plays in that league, and it feels really awesome that this is the 10th studio album of Iron Savior, that we're still there, we're still putting out records, and that, of course, is something that we as a band achieved, but without the people out there who are listening to the shows and who are supporting us, buying CDs, coming to the shows, all the fans out there, we wouldn't just exist. And so, big thank you to all you people out there, and, as usual, heavy metal never dies.